And welcome back to Coast with our special guest tonight, Barbara Marks Hubbard, as we talk about the conscious evolution. And we'll be back with her. We'll take some more calls on Coast to Coast AM. Barbara, I wish we had the shuttle program. We could get you up into space, couldn't we?
We could. I don't know who was it that took the physicist up, Stephen Hawking. Where? How did he get up? Because I don't remember how he got there.
He went up in a private little Enterprise, didn't he?
That's what I'm trying to remember. I thought it was Richard Branson and the Virgin Galactic.
Yeah, it was private. It was not NASA by any means.
No, it was not NASA, and he always wanted to go into space. And, you know, when I saw John Glenn way, way back there go up, I had that feeling that humanity's being born as a universal species. And that when we have people like you and me, George, in space broadcasting and connected to people on Earth who are creative, we would actually have a shift of consciousness on planet Earth.
All right, let's go to one of our callers from one of our secret admirers of yours, Barbara. And here this person is. Hello there, person.
Hello, Barbara.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, if I didn't know your age, and you should never ask a beautiful woman her age, there is no way listening to the radio tonight that I couldn't think back to our conversations deep into the night with Earls by the fireplace there in Lakeville. It's like time has stopped, and it's what we used to do.
It's what we used to do, and I'm still doing it, you see.
Exactly. You know, I wanted to have George tell you, you can get hold of Branson, and if you got a few shekels, he is going to be taking people like you and me suborbital into space beginning later this year and into next year. And it'll be a 10-minute trip. You'll spend a few minutes, about 5, 10, 6 minutes, at 60 miles in zero gravity. And it is real space flight, unlike what Stephen Hawking did, was to simply fly the what they call the Vomit Comet, which is an aircraft which gives you about 30 seconds.
Oh, thank you for reminding me of that. Well, you know, Richard Branson is quite a pioneer as an entrepreneur, but also he supported the elders like Mandela and Dalai Lama and coming together, kind of older, wise people.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking of contacting Richard Branson with many of my friends who think this is an important thing to celebrate on December 22nd, 2012, what is being born on planet Earth? What is innovative and creative, including the possibility of an expanded space program so we ourselves could become a universal?
Well, that'll be a Saturday night, Barbara. That Friday night, Richard, you'll be with me on the program with our cast of thousands, right?
Now, all our calculations are thrown off, George, because it looks like this consciousness awakening is going to be born not next year, but maybe toward the end of this year. This whole thing with Vesta and Elenine is so astonishing. And the data I have to present, Robin and I leave tomorrow morning for Leeds, and Barbara, you should come. You should really come to Leeds University at the end of the week, Saturday, Sunday. I'm giving a four-hour presentation on Saturday night, and George knows these can tend to go a little long. And I'm going to be laying out the blueprint for this incredible consciousness revolution that you've been talking about, because it's here. It's not going to wait for 2012. It looks like it's a little bit early, like a premature birth, to keep with the metaphor.
That's great.
Well, please let me know more about that. It's very important.
It's all over my Facebook page, Richard C. Hoagland Facebook, you know, whatever the URL is, and you can join the conversation. I can send you a private note. You can send me one. And, yeah, well, you should definitely come toward the end of the week, because there are some major people showing up, Richard Dolan. It's called the Exopolitics Conference at Leeds.
Oh, the Exopolitics. Okay. Well, you see, I really believe what you're saying is there's a lot of new things happening, and we're just adding to it, hopefully, to show the connectivity of all that's happening. We've just learned that in our environment, that there's an ecology that where things are connected. You can't just change one thing without affecting the other. The same is true of innovation and creativity. And we have never seen the connection of that which is creative And that's part of what I'm saying, Richard, that we could be celebrating with Birth 2012. And I want to add something, that it's not just conscious evolution abstractly. I'm teaching a course, Richard, and you'd be a great guest, called Agents of Conscious Evolution. And you can get it on birth2012.com. And what I'm doing is inviting people from all over the world, and hopefully some of your listeners here, to come and work together starting on August 9th for 12 weeks. We're going to say, what does it take to be an agent to shift the world? What's your particular contribution? So if you have a guest like you, Richard, then you say, this is happening. And I'm going to be talking to Ken Wilber. He'll be saying, what's happening? I just talked to Don Miguel Luis, who's going to have a big event on December 22nd, probably in Mexico. So it's not that there's just one great event. It's just, let's get the ball rolling to this planetary smile.
Super. Richard, thanks for the call in. And Barbara, Jerry Purnell's still listening to you, too, out of his house.
That's so good. I haven't talked to either of them.
You know, he's doing well. You know, he had a brain tumor. And, But he's doing fine now. He's a fighter.
Oh, that's so good. Hello there, Jerry.
He is a fighter indeed. Do you think people can change their own destiny?
Oh, absolutely. I think evolution by choice means moment by moment, your choice as to what you say yes to and what you say no to changes your life. I said yes to the right things. That's how I'm this way at 81. I said yes when I met Earl at that little cafe in Paris, and he said, we're going to find a new story. I said yes. I got married. Then I said yes when I saw that space program. I said, let's see how we can support that. I said yes to actually becoming a vice presidential candidate. That was an impossible task to get nominated. You know why I said yes? Because there was inside me what I think of as an impulse to grow, to express. And every single person has that impulse. The difference is whether you feel it and say yes to it or ignore it and say no to it.
That's so true. To the phones we go. We'll go to California. First time caller. Hey, Jay, go ahead.
Well, hi. Hello, everyone. It's a real honor to be on the show with such a great cast.
Good to have you with us.
Well, hi, Barbara.
Hello. Hi there.
I strongly, very much believe in what you're saying here tonight. I'm very happy to hear the words that are coming from you this evening. For the past several years myself, getting to what's going on, I've actually been filming what I do truly believe is the coming of Jesus Christ.
Really?
Yes, yes.
Well, and what have you been filming about?
Yeah, I've kept myself hidden, and I've been trying to get through for quite a while. But right here, I think I've got an opportunity for that consciousness you've been talking about.
Well, you know, in a way, if you want to say Christ consciousness, what would that be? Consciousness of love, consciousness of creativity, and also consciousness we can do the works that he did, and greater works can we do? That's what he told us. He said, I'm your friend. I'm your friend. And I've had some Christ experiences myself where I really felt that that the story of Jesus from the virgin birth through the whole miracles and love and teaching, crucifixion and resurrection, ascension and story is the story of evolution. That I think Jesus came in as a new human to set the pattern of what we could become.
Do you think he was supernatural?
You know what? I think all of nature is so mysteriously, awesomely intelligent, from the atom to the molecule to the cell, all the way on up, that there's a super nature behind evolution. And I'm not talking about intelligent design or a God outside. I'm really speaking of consciousness as being the fundamental intelligence of the universe, which is more super nature than any aspect of nature, including you and me. But what's happening in our spiritual breakthrough now is more of us are conscious of that consciousness. You could call it God, supernature, spirit, implicate order, tendency toward higher order, that impulse of evolution is what I like to call it, is way transcending any of its creation. And I think that humans and the great spiritual masters like Jesus and Buddha had a breakthrough of that impulse as who they are. And then they founded the religions because the rest of us couldn't really do it. But more of us now, like the people on this phone, are breaking through into an awareness of that within us, beyond us. And maybe when we connect enough, we will recognize that we are the expression of a great creative mystery. That's what I think.
Good for you. Next up, let's go to South Bend, Indiana. Linda's with us, east of the Rockies. Hi, Linda.
Hi, George. And hello, Barbara.
Hello.
Hello. I have a question. Many years ago, say in 1991, I had a question, and I wanted to know what the major shift was in human consciousness from the image of woman and matriarchal society to the image of man and a patriarchal society. And I did a big thesis. I read 56 books and did a 125-page thesis on the image of woman through primitive ritual and modern poetry. I recently lost my mother. And my question is, I lost her to what I believe is an overuse of pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm.
And my question to you, Barbara, in lieu of higher consciousness and what we are striving to become and actualize in ourselves as human beings, the connection to the image of woman and our mother as the source of creation, you know, the goddess Ceres, the corn mother, the fertility goddess, the everything that our mothers are.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
And the loss of one's mother.
You know, my mother. Are you on?
Yeah, she's still there.
Okay. My mother died when I was 12. She had died of breast cancer. And that loss of the mother is even now, there's a deep and profound loss. And I want to tell you what I think is the image of woman now. We've had the matriarchy, we've had the patriarchy, which I think ended with the atomic bomb in the sense that you can't go on using power and destroy your environment. It's not possible. So the patriarchy is shifting, but into what? And I think the word co-creation is the right one, that we're becoming co-evolutionary or co-creative with the creative process itself. And the woman, like myself, and many, many others, are the feminine co-creators. We feel the impulse of evolution inside ourselves as creativity. You might say, you know, Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. If you've seen the co-creative feminine, you've seen the creative force, but it's feminized, it's loving, and it's expressive, just exactly like you and I on this phone. So the feminine co-creator, living at a time of a planetary crisis, wanting to express her own creativity, and she's not having that many babies anymore, and she's not dying young. So women 50, 60, 70, 80, when we fall in love with something creative, I feel that it regenerates our bodies. I literally feel that my sense of life purpose is regenerative, and that's true of men as well. But women used to give, obviously, we give birth to the babies. We reproduce life. I actually think we evolve life as well.
Do you remember Richard Bach's book, Jonathan Livingston Seagull?
I do.
Classic.
It's a wonderful book, and I'd like to tell you about a biography that Neil Donald Walsh wrote of me called The Mother of Invention. Now, why did he say that? He was thinking, what do I call this biography? What do I call it? And he said, necessity is the mother of invention. So let's say, George, that the crisis on Earth, including environmental crisis and the possibility of destroying ourselves in many different ways, including the evil so-called behavior, that crisis is a necessity causing invention. And just at this title, the mother of invention, may be the feminine co-creator by the necessity to serve life, not only the children, but all of life on Earth, is actually an expression of that evolutionary necessity.
Good point. Let's take another call before the break here. Let's go to Washington, D.C. Ray, go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to say that your guest, Barbara Marks Hubbard, she has such a beautiful spirit, and she may be 81 years old, but she seems so much younger. I'm 66 myself, and people tell me the same thing. I was wondering, before a couple commercial breaks, she mentioned about Buckminster Fuller, which I was such a great fan of, and she said she was devoting her life to some of his philosophy, but she never really finished that. And did you know a scientist from NASA named Paul Heffernan? I knew him in the late 60s. He's retired now from NASA.
I did not know him, but I had a couple of great teachers. One was Abraham Maslow. Another was the French philosopher Teilhard de Chardin. And then Buckminster Fuller. And when I read that little book, Utopia or Oblivion, and he said, we have the resources, technology, and know-how to make of this world a 100% physical success. When I read that, I thought, oh, my God, that is good news. But why is it nobody knows this? So I had those in the early years. I just sought people out who had that great vision. I met him, and then he's the one who said to me, well, of course, I studied the design science revolution, and he was able to see that there's a natural design, that when we get with it and use the right technology and the right type of communication and the right type of energy, that we can really have life ever evolving. So I met him, and I was talking once at Southern Illinois University.
Mm-hmm.
In 1972.
Carbondale, Illinois.
Yes, Carbondale, Illinois. We were having a conference called Mankind in the Universe, and Tom Turner was his director of special projects, said, "Miss Dr. Fuller has a message for you." We all stood on the stage, and he said, he wants you to run for president of the United States because we need women to carry positive options into the future.
Well, you did indeed, Barbara, pave the way for so many other people. Stick around. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, and we will take final phone calls, so don't touch your dial. On our next Coast to Coast program, Leslie Kane joins me as we talk about her latest work. She's an investigative journalist. UFOs, generals, pilots, and government officials are going on the record to talk about irrefutable firsthand accounts of UFO encounters. Amazing. We'll be back in a moment now with Barbara Marks Hubbard on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Barbara, I'm sure you still dabble as a futurist. What do you see long range for all of us?
Well, if our crisis is the birth of the next stage of evolution, which I think it is, and it's dangerous, and I'm assuming that having a vision of that attracts us is part of us getting through the crisis. Here's what I really see. If you combine our spiritual, social innovations, and radically new technologies, I think we're seeing the emergence of a universal species. And what would that really mean? I think we're going to have extended life, extended intelligence, extended contact throughout the universe, that we will be freed up from repetitive labor, and that type of human has emerged in great beings in the past, in great geniuses of humanity, but that the species itself will evolve into a co-creative humanity or not. And if we don't, and if we stay self-centered, separate, competitive, overpopulating and polluting, we won't make it.
At all.
So it's real. Well, I think we probably can't destroy all of human civilization, but the advanced civilization of modern society will go. It has to go anyway.
Yeah.
But what's the co-creative society? That's the one we're working on, George. And you know what? By rallying ourselves to what attracts us, that makes the difference as to whether or not we make it. It's not a neutral universe.
How did you do this shift in your life? I mean, have you always believed in this? Have you always gone down that path?
I never, there was nothing like this to believe in. I came from a Jewish, agnostic, secular, materialistic business family in New York City. My father was Louis Marx. He was a toy maker, Marx Toys.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, really. And when I asked him what religion we were, he said, "You're an American. Do your best." He was very tough. And then I thought, well, what'll I do my best at? And because he was, I had a very privileged childhood. And I actually had no idea of anything but an inner feeling that there had to be some greater meaning than more toys. And I think when I was 6 years old, I knew more toys would not do it. And, you know, most six-year-olds haven't learned that. So then I began to think of, you know, what attracts me. And I would say when we dropped the bombs on Japan, I woke up to the question of where we're going as a species. And it took me a while, I would say, getting married to my husband, Earl Hubbard, who was an artist, then reading people like Teilhard de Chardin. He was a great Catholic paleontologist, never published by the church in his lifetime, but mainly he saw a pattern or the divine process in evolution leading to higher order and greater consciousness. And George, he foresaw the future best. He foresaw that at some point, this thinking layer of Earth that we're on now with the telephone, the internet, the global brain, the noosphere, the mind sphere, he called it, this sphere is going to connect. And we're going to connect heart with heart, center with center, mind with mind, brain with brain, in a global intelligence that he called the Christification of the Earth. And I'm calling it the planetary birth. Because it's not a religion. It's the next stage of evolution. And when I read that, I knew my goal in life was to participate in that thinking layer, that noosphere, waking up collectively. And I believe I had a social revelation of the collective potential of humanity. And what it did gave me a vocation. Basically, the vocation was go tell the story of the birth of a universal co-creative humanity. And I was a wife and mother of five children in Lakefield, Connecticut. And I would say one of the things that made me this way was depression. I got very depressed around the fourth child, not because I didn't love my children, but because there was more potential in me than I could possibly express in the culture of Lakefield, Connecticut, where you were supposed to, I don't know, people didn't dare express that greater potential in them.
And you weren't expressing how you felt inside.
I was not expressing my potential, and it made me depressed. And the Freudian analysis was that I was neurotic. And because how could you, with 4 to 5 children, want more? And then I met Dr. Jonas Salk. He called me up one day because I'd written a letter about what he was doing. And I told Jonas everything that was wrong with me. I was attracted to the future. I wanted to connect. I thought more was coming. And he said, "Barbara, that's not what's wrong about you. That's what's right about you. You are an evolutionary woman." Well, that changed my life. I suddenly thought everything that was wrong with me, making me yearning for more, was actually what was good. So it's very important, if you feel depressed, to say what's trying to be expressed and then reach out, because if one other person can really see you, you know that famous phrase in Avatar, "I see you." Jonas Salk saw me. I must have been about 34 years old. That plus the noosphere, the thinking layer of Earth connecting, I got my vision. And I realized I'm a participant in evolution. I'm not simply reading about it or studying it. I am it. You are. We are. The process of evolution becoming conscious of itself. That's what I'm teaching. That's why I want people to take my course, Agents of Conscious Evolution, birth2012.com. I think, George, this is a discovery as great as the discovery of democracy or science.
It could be if it goes the right way, Barbara.
I think it is, even in a way it's inclusive, because it if we think that we can evolve and are evolving consciously, we will. If we don't realize that and we think everything's going to hell or we can't do anything about it, that itself is very, that's directive. That makes that happen. The images we hold is what we do. So I think I love being on your show. I thought I would be tired, but I'm totally woken up.
No, it's energizing. And one day we got to do a show on your father's toy company.
We should. I can tell you lots of stories.
I bet he came home with all kinds of gizmos and things.
Oh, my God. Did he come home with not only his own toys, but all the competitors' toys? I remember one.
He once sold 100 million yo-yos. Did you know that?
Well, I didn't know how many, but he
100 million yo-yos.
Well, I mean, that's really true. Imagine being his daughter.
My gosh. How did he get into this business of making toys?
Well, he was a poor boy on the streets of Brooklyn, and he loved dogs and children. And the story goes that I don't want to go into the details of it, but he was the first person to make inexpensive toys. Before my father, toys were for wealthy people. He got connected to Disney, and he made Disney toys. And he was the first toy maker that Disney had worked with. And so he had this wonderful toy company, and it was down in New York City. There was a big toy building. A lot of different toy companies were in there. And as children, we had a completely charmed life. And my father would take us out to, we went to Dinty Moore's restaurants, and he used to say, "There's the biggest gangster in the country." We met the gangsters. We went to Gypsy Rose Lee's sort of striptease shows, sat in front row with four children. He was a wonderful
father.
Hey, by the
way, striptease shows then aren't what they are now, just so people know.
Well, I don't know what they are now, but then we got to know Gypsy Rose Lee. And he wanted his children to know everything. And he would take us with him. When I was 16, Eisenhower asked him to go to Europe and examine the war-torn industries, and my father took me over with him, and I stayed with Eisenhower's assistant.
Amazing. Was your father ever an ambassador or anything like that?
No, he didn't want to do that. He sort of wanted to stay in his own, field, but Eisenhower loved my father. And my father was quite brilliant, but as elder's daughter, he would every now and then catch hold of what I was saying. And one time I came to him and I said, "What would happen if you were my partner? What would happen if a visionary could really be joined with an entrepreneur? Would you like that?" said I to him. And he laughed at me. He said, "You crazy fool." But he loved me too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's something. Was he strict with you?
He was scary in the sense that he would get angry easily. He was very competitive. And I'm the oldest of the first batch of four children. So he'd make us, he'd compare us one with the other. And he was a friend of Bernard Gimbel's. And he and Bernard Gimbel were the most competitive men you can imagine. And they would, my father would say, "This child is better than that child." And he'd make us fight my brother, and he'd tie my brother's hand behind his back. And we fought our brother, the three girls. Huh. I don't think and somebody said to me, "You must have had a really scholarly, wonderful father." Actually, he was a tough guy. But he went to New York University. He went to night school. He would bring the professors like Sidney Hook to dinner at the 21 Club. And he'd take me out with these great professors. And, you know, it was a great childhood.
I think we'll take some final calls here, Barbara. But I think it's just fantastic the way America was developed by innovators, entrepreneurs, people like your father, who came from nothing and, you know, built, you know, a multi-million dollar enterprise and came up with it, was creative. And that's cool. I did not know that.
That's cool. And so when he said to me, his eldest daughter, "You're an American, do your best," I realized it couldn't be doing exactly what he did. So I think my best, our best, would be to say we're capable of consciously evolving to restore the earth, free the people, explore the universe. That's my best.
That's fantastic. Okay, final calls. Let's go to San Francisco. Hello, Roger. Thanks for holding. Go ahead. Rog, you there?
Hello.
Yep, go ahead, Rog.
I was wondering if Barbara had perhaps a favorite single litmus test regarding evaluating the current state or level of consciousness, either in the United States generally or the world. I have my favorite, of course, but particularly as it pertains to compassion and empathy. Those are some, key words people are throwing around these days. Anyway, a litmus test.
What do you think, Barbara?
I think that that's a very good question, and it's exactly the word I'd use, is empathy. I don't think there's any doubt there is an expansion of empathy. And this really is because the news media will show us every crisis there is, and particularly like the tsunami in Japan, or the terrible struggles that are going on in Libya and Syria. The amount of attention, empathy, and desire to help is growing rapidly. And the feeling with each other is growing rapidly. I think our spiritual evolution is growing rapidly in the sense, not so much as organized religion, but an internal sense of spirit. I think that the growth of women and the emergence of the feminine, co-creative, evolutionary woman is a huge breakthrough. And her partnering with the evolutionary men who also are breaking out of the patriarchy is a huge breakthrough. I believe that things like the Shift Network, where I'm teaching, is amazing. You know, that I thought I was more or less sort of in semi-retirement till Stephen Dynan asked me to teach on the Shift Network.
You'll never retire, Barbara.
And I was then reaching hundreds of people in this view that I'm giving you, George, just briefly over the phone. And you know what that did to me? It just woke me up to my next stage of potential. So I think the teleseminar world, like the Shift Network, is a huge breakthrough because it's inexpensive for people to reach all the best evolutionary, spiritual, innovative teachers in the world. They're all going on internet.
That's something. You remind me of the movie Somewhere in Time. I mean, here you are with your energy, 81 years old. I'm going to go put an old suit on, Barbara, and go back into time and meet you when you were about 30. Yeah, I bet you were as delightful then as you are now.
I think I'm getting better, George.
Good for you. Good for you. Let's go to Abel in Nashville, Tennessee. Go ahead, Abel.
Wow. Hi. How's it going?
Okay. Only got about a minute or so for you, so take it away.
Okay. I have a hypothesis to run past both of you. One of your guests earlier last week sparked my imagination, and I was wondering if the possibility someday of teleportation becomes a science. We have it down pat. We can do it. Maybe because the theory is that you can translate matter into wavelengths and then translate it back into matter, would those wavelengths be specific per organism? So
I think so. You know, you can collapse the wave into a particle. That's the way physics works. By your observation, you collapse the wave into the particle or into the presence or possibly into the person. And I think some of the higher level beings, the mystical archetypes like the Christ, that we actually are collapsing a wave into a presence. So I wouldn't be surprised that we can teleport, because we are energy in motion. And I think we'll be able to teleport. I think we'll have telepathy as well. And I think when the noosphere, the thinking layer, connects, we'll find ourselves connected, actually, almost by instant communication, not only via internet, but by our consciousness connecting. Like, I feel right now on this phone that my consciousness is connecting to so many people, and I actually feel it.
Wait till they start hitting your website, Barbara, which I want to give out right here. It's BarbaraMarksHubbard.com. Also evolve.org, all linked up for everybody at coasttocoastam.com. Barbara, the clock has got us, if you can believe it. So I want you to go to bed, and thanks for being on the program.
I had a wonderful time, George. Thank you so much.
You're a delight. Barbara Marks Hubbard, and don't forget our program tomorrow as we talk about aliens and what did pilots see a long time ago. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudisseur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.